We're in Acts chapter 6 this morning. Acts chapter 6. And the title of the message this morning is Growing Pains. Growing Pains. Some kids get growing pains on a regular basis. I just remember some of our kids having growing pains and their legs would hurt, or you know, they would be in pain and it's just like, oh, sorry, you just have growing pains. It's all part of growing up, growing pains. As we get older, there's growing pains, growing old pains. You know, some of us have switched over from growing pains to growing old pains. And that's all part of growing old too, growing old pains. It's one of those things that, you know, some of us are just a pain in the neck, you know. So some of us cause pains, but probably all of us to somebody, one or another's that type of a person. But we see here in Acts chapter 6, we see the church going through some growing pains. Verse 1 again says, "And in those days, when the number of the disciples was multiplied, there arose a murmuring of the Grecians against the Hebrews, because their widows were neglected in the daily ministration." So in those days, just as kind of a term that doesn't really give us a lot of understanding for sure about how much time has elapsed. Some people believe that this is right after the time when the disciples were in front of the priest, and some people believe it could have been as far as 5 years down the road. And we just really don't know how much time has elapsed since that time. So, but we do see these troubles that are starting to enter in, and there's just another challenge for the new church. And this section is just another challenge for the new church. The early church was going through these pains. The church was growing at such a rate that it was hard to keep up with all the needs. I mean, you just think about it. You add as many people they've added to the church, and they just cannot keep up. They didn't have structure. They didn't have anything really set up for this type of growth. We've already noted that the church was growing by leaps and bounds. In chapter 2, verse 41, 3,000 were added to the church on the first day. I mean, just think of the logistic nightmare of that. 3,000 people the first day. That's enough for 12 apostles, isn't it? That's kind of enough for them to deal with right off the bat. But then, in 247, we saw that people were being saved daily. Every day, new people are being added to the church. What a great time of blessing, but it's also a time where, wow, more people are being saved all the time. After Peter healed the lame man, the number of men, it said, that were saved on that day was 5,000, about 5,000 men. Now, the numbers are getting so big that it's about 5,000 men that were saved. And that's just men. That doesn't count wives that might have been there. And most times when men are saved, especially in that culture of that day, who's coming along to the services? Mom and the rest of the family are probably going to come along. So, and families were bigger than in that day than today. So conservative estimates are that there could have been as much as, with the families added in, there could have been 20,000 or more people saved by that time in the early church. 12 leaders, over 20,000 new converts. Think of the just trying to figure out how to take care of all that. And in 5:14, the numbers are getting hard to count, because it says, and believers were added to the Lord multitudes, both men and women. So it's getting to the point where just not counting anymore. Multitudes are being saved. We can't keep up. So who knows what the number is at this point? And we don't know how long this has been But we do know that the numbers are getting pretty high for the church. And again, there's 12 apostles who are leading. Now, that's better than Moses with all the children of Israel. Remember, Moses had his problems with the multitudes there, but at least there's 12. But the type of that type of growth is a great blessing, but it can also cause challenges. Great growth is a great blessing, but it can also cause many challenges. Growth will often bring about necessary adjustments. When you grow, when as a church, or in this case, as they grew as a new church, there was adjustments that needed to be made. And this passage shows that at the time, the normal practices, what they were doing to try and deal with some of the needs, they need to be rethought. Times, we just need to be able to rethink. And sometimes we like to do the things the way we've been doing them, and we don't like to rethink. We don't like to change. None of us like to change things. We're all creatures of habit. You know, if somebody, like if one of our kids was to move back into our house, we wouldn't want to change the things that we do. I mean, it's like, oh, really? You're coming back? You know, we got to change everything the way we're doing. I'm not saying there's anybody coming back right away or that we know of, but some of you maybe had a child move back for a time, and it's like, oh, now we got to change. We don't like that. But sometimes readjustments are necessary. We need to fine-tune things. That's, you know, the apostles didn't say, oh, nope, we're not changing a thing. The apostles decided we need to adjust. We need to rethink. What was going on here? In those days, when the number of disciples were multiplied, there arose a murmuring of the Grecians. So what was going on was murmuring. And the disciples decide they're going to have to do something to rectify that situation. The word murmuring, it's one of those, how do you say that, onomatopoeic words? You know what that is? All of you know what that is, right? You all did good in English. You all know what that word is. What is it? It's a word that sounds like what's going on. So murmur, 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 murmur. You know, it's like, and that's what the word would have been like in the Greek. It's a word that sounds like what's happening. So, you know, it's kind of like, I hear something. There's just kind of a low murmur. And that's what was murmuring is what's happening. It carries the idea of a low rumbling. At first, it's hard to hear, but as it grows and more people are murmuring and more people are murmuring, it's kind of hard to ignore it because it kind of grows in intensity. It's kind of like guys who know mechanics. It's kind of like a bearing going bad. You know, a bearing that's lost its grease. And at first, you just hear a noise. You know, I've heard this in a car, like a wheel bearing, or I've heard it in machinery. You just hear this noise, and it's like, where's that coming? It's hard to tell where it's coming from because it's just a low hum. And mechanics will, we sold these things on the tool truck when I sold tools, a stethoscope. And it just had a little rod coming out of it, and you could just touch different bearings, and you could tell which one was starting to make that low noise because sometimes murmuring is hard to tell where it's coming from at first. Because it's just kind of a, you're not sure where that murmuring's coming from. But this murmuring was getting to the point where it was noticeable. It's kind of like that wheel bearing going out on your car. And it's like at first, like, I hear a noise, but I don't know where it's coming from. But then later on as you go, you know, and mechanics know if you turn your car one way, it gets louder. You turn your car the other way, it goes away. And then you can tell which side the murmuring's coming from and your bearing. And I'm sure you guys working on your fire machinery, you understand that murmuring. It just kind of grows and grows. So eventually, what happens if you don't take care of the bearing? Something's going to break, right? You're broke down. Things aren't going to work. That's the same way with murmuring. If murmuring continues on, everything falls apart. The machinery stops. And that's what was going to happen in the ministry here in the early church because there was murmuring. Murmuring is speaking negatively about others or ideas under your breath. Often, it's often under your breath or it's in private place where others present that you think will agree with you. Murmuring's kind of like dandelions. You know, this year, last year, I noticed that my neighbor's yards, most of them, didn't have dandelions in them. And I looked out at my yard, and it was pretty white and yellow. White from the seeds floating away, and yellow from all the dandelions. And I was like, you know what? My neighbors probably don't appreciate all my dandelions going into their yard. So I started a war, dandelion war. I got out the spray, and I started spraying dandelions. And by the end of last year, I thought I had them eradicated. I wasn't seeing yellow flowers anymore. But you know what? Over the year, I think they were fooling me. Because this year, it's got dandelions everywhere again. It's like, I thought I had these guys gone. It's kind of like murmuring. You think you've got it nipped in the, you know, and then all of a sudden it's back. And it's full force. I hate dandelions. I mean, they're kind of pretty if you think of them as a flower. And I think some people eat them. But, you know, I just don't want my neighbors to think bad of me. You know, it's, I just don't want them to think I'm the one who's causing all their problems. And, you know, dandelions can, they just, you know. Anyway, I didn't want my neighbors murmuring about my dandelions. So I tried to get rid of them. The murmuring needed to be addressed, though. The murmuring was because of, notice it says in those days when the number of the disciples was multiplied, there arose a murmuring of the Grecians against the Hebrews, because their widows, the Grecians' widows, were neglected in the daily ministration. So the murmuring was because the widows of the Grecians were neglected. The word neglected means they were overlooked. It doesn't mean overlooked in a bad sense. It just means somebody missed it. Somebody just didn't get it. You know, somebody wanted, I mean, this is, who was this against? The murmuring would have been against the apostles. They were the ones in charge here. They were the ones leading. They weren't fulfilling the task that they needed to do. But I don't think, I mean, this is the early apostles. I don't think they're doing it out of a, you know, wrong reason. They just overlooked it. Sometimes there's good things that we need to do, and we just overlook it. Sometimes people get upset about, oh, they didn't do this, or this person didn't do that. You know, have you ever been like that? Like, you know, you get upset because somebody didn't do something. Wives, my husband didn't bring me flowers on my birthday, or didn't do this on my birthday. And sometimes the husband just overlooked it. You know, not saying that's right, but my wife's had plenty of times when I overlooked something. You know, if every time that I overlooked something, she got that upset, we'd have been divorced long ago. Because I tend to overlook a lot of things. And this was something that was overlooked in the church, not because they were being bad, it just, they did it. They were neglected in the daily ministration. They were overlooking these widows. What does that mean? The Greek word in the daily ministration. What is ministration? That is the word we get deacon from. It's diakonia. So they were overlooked in the deacon. Now, they were overlooked in the diakonia, which means, that doesn't mean that this is talking about a deacon here. It just means they were overlooked in the daily needs. The word there means taking care of the daily needs of somebody else. Taking care of the needs of somebody else. It is often, you've probably heard it, it's often used of waiting on tables. They were, the apostles were neglecting the Grecians in the daily taking care of the widows. The widows often, in that day and age, they didn't have Social Security. They didn't have a way, if their husband died, if their family didn't take care of them, they were kind of destitute. And so widows needed somebody to take care of them. And if they became Christians, and now the Jews are starting to persecute Christians, the temple used to have ways of taking care of widows. that they could go to the temple and the temple would have funds that they would give out to widows or food that they'd give out to widows. But now if you're a Christian and the priests are starting to attack Christians and starting to be against Christians, maybe that's been cut off now. And so these widows are really, really in need. So the daily handing out of food to the widows, they're being neglected. At this point, it seems as if the apostles were fulfilling this service. Can you imagine 12 men trying to take care of a congregation of well over 20,000 and trying to keep track of all the widows? That's what was happening. 12 men trying to take care of, and there was a group here that they were just getting neglected. The disciples probably remembered Jesus teaching in Matthew 20:26, but it shall not be so among you, but whosoever will be great among you, let him be your minister. What word is that? Deacon. Let him be your deacon. Let him be your servant. They found out about the problem because of murmuring. However, murmuring is not the correct way to handle a situation. What is murmuring? It's sin. Murmuring is sin. Philippians 2:14 and 15 says, do all things without what? Murmuring and disputing, that ye may be blameless. So if you are without murmuring, it's one of the ways that you can be blameless and harmless, the sons of God, without rebuke in the midst of a crooked and perverse nation among whom you stand, shine as lights in the world. So they didn't have that passage then yet, but murmuring is sin. Jude 16, when it's talking about a bad group of people, says these are murmurers, complainers. So that we know that murmuring is sin, yet in this case, the murmurers had a valid point. You know, sometimes murmurers have a valid point, but they go about it in the wrong way. Murmuring can be for valid points, but murmuring is always sin. And it would have been wrong for the apostles to ignore that murmuring. Okay? Just because this tells us that we need to evaluate all complaints, even if they're expressed in a sinful way. All right? We need to evaluate every complaint, even if somebody expresses it in a sinful way. Because sometimes their complaint is right. Sometimes the complaint is right, even if they express it wrong. We often want to nullify the complaint that is brought by sinful means, but that's not what the apostles did. They heard murmuring. The apostles understood that murmuring was wrong, but they didn't just say, oh, they're just murmuring, let's just blow them off. No, they were concerned about the situation, and they addressed the situation, even though it was they heard about it in the wrong way. A wise pastor once told me, often there's at least a small amount of truth in your worst critics. The people who criticize you the most vehemently, there's often some truth in that. And so even if somebody is you think they're just always criticizing you, there's often some truth in their criticism. And we need to, if somebody's criticizing us, we need to at least think about that and pray about it. Because the apostles could have said, what? We're the apostles. We're doing everything right. No, they didn't look at it that way. They said, there's murmuring. Is it a valid point? What do we do about it? So this murmuring was brought about, though, by an oversight. We've already seen that, but this murmuring was brought about by an oversight. They were neglected in the daily ministration. The growing pains were bound to happen. It's not that believers that... I already kind of covered this. I kind of got ahead of myself. But can you imagine the logistic nightmare that was going on at this time for the apostles? The widows of the Hebrew Jews must have been given food on a regular basis from the funds. Remember, the funds had been received because some people had sold their lands and others were giving money. And so the widows were taken care out of those funds. But somehow this other group was not noticed. I'm sure we're not told about all the growing pains that happened during that time, but this is one that we are made aware of. Well, what was causing the neglect? It was neglect because of differences. Neglect because of differences. We see two different groups listed in this passage. Notice there's Grecians and Hebrews. Grecians were Jews who grew up in Greek culture. Okay, so there's different cultures, just like there's different cultures around here. In the United States, there were different cultures of Jews. And these Grecian Jews probably grew up outside of Palestine, and for some reason had come back. Maybe they were some that came back for the feast and then were saved, and they just stayed, and they grew up in a completely different culture, even though they were Jews. They were those that maybe had moved back because, you know, some Jews just get to the point where we want to be back in the Holy Land, and they move back. They're maybe living in different areas, Russia or wherever today, and we want to be back in the Holy Land. Some Jews, they believed back then, would have lived outside of Judea, out in a Greek culture, and as they got old and they were ready to die, they just wanted to go back to Jerusalem to die. Why were there so many widows? Well, if husbands often die quicker than the wives, and they move back to Jerusalem, now they've moved back and they die and they leave widows behind. It could be a reason why there were so many widows. And who would be attracted to these Christians who cared about other people and loved other people and just showed compassion to, well, widows. Widows would have been attracted in great numbers to the church. So I believe there were a lot of widows. So they grew up outside of Palestine. The Grecians would have spoken Greek and possibly a language from where they were from. So that made a difference. And some of them were Gentiles who had been converted to Judaism. They would have still been seen as a Jew, but some of them were Gentiles who had now been saved, but they had already converted to Judaism, so they had a different culture for sure. The Hebrews were those who were raised in a primarily Jewish culture around Jerusalem and in the land of Palestine. So they were raised in a more strictly Jewish culture. And the Hebrews would have spoken primarily Aramaic or Hebrew. So can you see where there would have been some differences here? Just the different language barrier could have caused the neglect. I mean, you have people that are saved who are Christians, and these guys speak primarily Greek. And the Jews would have spoke some Greek too, but it might not have been all of their main language. And but these guys speak mainly Greek or maybe some other language that they had come from, and these guys are speaking Aramaic, and there's kind of a language barrier going on in the church. It's kind of like what we've seen in the book of Romans. In the book of Romans, it was Jews and Gentiles that was causing some division. Here, it's Jews of Hebrew culture and Jews of Grecian culture, Greek culture, that's causing this kind of a clash. It shows that differences are not just caused because of race. You know, a lot of people want to pull the race card today, but these were mostly primarily Jews of this, but they're just Jews of different culture. It made me think of, how many of you have watched the Beverly Hillbillies before? You know, the Beverly Hillbillies, remember they moved out to California from the hills. And were the Beverly Hillbillies nice people? They were nice people, right? They were kind, giving. They always wanted to feed people possum and hog jowls and all this other stuff. They wanted to get out the best stuff. But the people in Beverly Hills, what did they think of possum and hog jowls and all that kind of stuff? They're like, oh, yuck. The granny always thought she was trying to give her best to Mr. and Mrs. Drysdale. But their cultures were so different that they were always clashing. One's trying to do their best to Mr. Drysdale, always wants to try and, well, he wants the money. But, you know, they were always trying to do good for each other, but they didn't understand each other. Their cultures were so different, and I think that's what was going on here. Their cultures were so different that they didn't understand, and that was making it harder for these groups to get along. It's kind of like people from the South and people from the North. I mean, you go into the Southern culture. I went into a gas station one time when I was living down in South Carolina, and you would think they'd be happy I'm bringing my business. And it was a small country gas station. You know what the lady said to me? Because you could hear I was a Yankee. What are you doing in here? I mean, I'm buying gas. I said, buying gas? You know, I didn't go back to that gas station. Just the cultural difference was so strong. We often magnify differences and let them cause division. And that's what was going on here. Differences causing division. One group was being neglected, and it was causing stress in the early church. And this was a growing pain that needed to be addressed before it split the church. I mean, this had great potential to do great harm to the early church because there was all this murmuring going on. Who was really behind the division? Satan. See, whenever there's murmuring going on, Satan's behind it. Satan's always behind murmuring. From the beginning of the church, Satan was hard at work trying to stop the spread. Let's look back at chapter 2. Before the first sermon is preached on the day of Pentecost, Satan was at work trying to stop the ministry of the church. Chapter 2, verse 13, when the people see the effects and heard what was going on, what did they say? Verse 13, others mocking said, "These men are full of new wine." The first sermon hadn't even been preached, and Satan had mockers there. And people saying they're drunk. Ephesians 6:12 says, "For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of darkness of this world, against the spiritual wickedness in high places." 1 Peter 5:8 says, "Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walketh about, seeking whom he may devour." You know, Satan was active in that day, and he's active today. He wants to destroy unity within the church. He wants to destroy, if he can get people within the church to bicker with one another, he's going to do that. He was hard at work to destroy the church and the preaching of the gospel. In chapter 4, we saw the priests and the Sadducees threatening them not to speak or teach in that name. They wouldn't even say Jesus' name. They just said, "Don't preach in that name." So we saw the priests and the religious leaders of the day being tools of Satan. Then in chapter 5, we saw him working in the hearts of those within the church. Remember Ananias and Sapphira? What did Peter say in Acts 5:3? "But Peter saith, Ananias, why hath what? Satan filled thine heart to lie to the Holy Ghost." See, Satan was at work in Ananias and Sapphira's life. He was working. He's like, I had these mockers. That didn't work. I got the chief priests and the high priests and everybody to attack them. That didn't work. I'm going to go inside the church. I'm going to get people to be hypocrites. I'm going to try and use hypocrisy within the church. Why do some people say, "I don't want to go to the church"? Why? Too many hypocrites. I mean, folks, we got to be careful. Because Satan uses these tools, and he uses Christians to do his work. How often does Satan use Christians to do his work? And we need to understand his devices, because he's cunning. He uses things and he uses us to destroy the work of God. And none of us, I don't think anyone in here wants to be a tool of Satan. None of us want that. But I think all of us have been that at times within the church. I mean, how many of us could say we've never murmured? You know, we've all murmured. We've all been guilty of that. And then when we do that, it's just, It's you just saying, okay, Satan, I want to help you destroy the church. We don't want that. I don't think anyone in here wants that. But we're all fooled at times into doing Satan's work for him. Ananias and Sapphira were fooled into doing Satan's work. That didn't work, though, because God purged his church. And great fear came upon all the church in chapter 5, verse 11. Hypocrites quickly got right. They're like, you know, great fear means that people, I was thinking about doing the same thing. I'm not doing that. I'm going to be very careful. That's what great fear does. Great fear makes us careful not to do Satan's work. Great fear came upon all the church. Hypocrites quickly got right. People understood the consequences of sin. Then again, the high priest, the next attack of Satan, he goes back to the priests. The Sanhedrin attacked the apostles and he imprisoned them and he beat them. He's like, okay, I'll go back to the priests and I'll try and get them. He's like, I'm going to try and get them to kill him. And he tried to get them to kill them. And that didn't work. That didn't stop the spread. The gospel kept spreading and kept spreading. And Satan's like, how can I stop this? The next tactic was to use the deficiencies of people. The apostles, good guys, but they overlooked something. Good guys overlooking something, and guess what? The best of men are going to overlook things at times. The best of men are going to sin. The best of men are going to do things wrong, and there's always something to complain about. If my wife wanted to complain about me, guys, if your wife wanted to complain about you, you know, how long could be the list? It could be pretty long, right? Wives are pretty forgiving. Katie, she's got to be very forgiving. She knows I pick on her. But everybody knows. I mean, if you're in any type of a relationship that lasts, you have to be forgiving. And continually speaking about the problem is not going to help. Looking, you know, finding ways to fix the problem, that's what's going to help. So he used the shortcomings of the apostles, and he used interpersonal relationships. He used shortcomings, and he used interpersonal relationships to try and destroy. He's like, I found a way that I can try and divide the church. And there's two different groups here, and I know people, two different groups, it's really easy to get in there and divide because there's two different types of people. Two different types of people. You know what? In our church, there's different people too. How many of you grew up outside of Ohio? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. At least 5 people grew up outside. 6. At least 6 people. Katie, where'd you grow up? Where? Tanzania? She's got to be weird. Harriet, where'd you grow up? Oh, she's one of those southerners that we're talking about. Gara, where'd you grow up? Pennsylvania people? Mr. Illinois people. Where'd you grow up? Yeah. Indiana. A lot of different people, different cultures. We all have to come together. All of us grew up in different families. I would say that my parents' traditions and the way they raised us are different than the way Harriet's parents raised her. And different than the way Jacob's parents raised him. And Katie, we know that she's different. She was raised, I mean, can you imagine being raised in Tanzania? There's a lot of things that would have been different from that time. And Satan would like nothing better than to take those differences and magnify them in the people and cause division. Christians fell for it. The early church fell for it. They started murmuring and complaining. They fell for Satan's tactics. Never allow Satan to gain a foothold in his church by sin, by murmuring against others in the church. When you do that, you're just saying, okay, Satan, you're in control. Use me. What was the song you played today? What was the song? What were the words? Lord, I give my life to you. Take control each day. I will follow anywhere, near or far away. When we start murmuring, what are we saying? Satan, I give my life to you. Take control each day. I will follow anywhere, near or far away. We just switch the words out. We should be saying, here am I, Lord, send me. Help me not to murmur. Help me not to complain. Help me not to do Satan's work. Help me not to do the things that will destroy the church, but help me do the things that will build it up. Yeah, there are going to be things where Pastor Josh and I do that we overlook something. If the apostles can overlook something, any of us can, right? I mean, the apostles were directed by God. Here am I, Lord, send me. Here am I, Lord, send me. I will serve you faithfully. Here am I, Lord, send me. You might be right. But it's never right to sin to correct a wrong from somebody else. Never do Satan's work for him. And in those days, when the number of the disciples was multiplied, there rose a murmuring of the Grecians against the Hebrews, because their widows were neglected in the daily ministration. Next week, we're going to look at what the apostles did. The apostles, even though they were sin going on, they said, yeah, that's a real, they got a point. Let's take care of it. And so, you know, somebody may come to you murmuring. Well, listen to what they have to say. I mean, don't advance the murmuring, but you know, sometimes you just have to listen. You know, that's a valid point. Let's just go and talk to somebody about it. You know, that's what stops murmuring, is just kind of going to the source and just say, hey, you know, this is happening. Now, it doesn't mean that they're always going to take your side on it. But going to the source is the way you stop murmuring. Just go to the source instead of to somebody else when we murmur, we just are saying, hey, listen to my cause. And if it's somebody that can't do anything about it, it's not helping. It's doing Satan's work. Lord, I pray that you help us because, Lord, all of us are guilty of murmuring at times. Lord, help us to see it as helping the other side. Lord, I don't believe anybody here wants to help Satan do his work in our church. I think people here generally have a desire to see the church grow and have a desire to see the church come together. And I pray that you would help us all to have a loving attitude toward each other, to go to each other with differences, and to kindly and graciously talk them over. Lord, I pray that you would help us because we are from different states, different cultures, different families. And we don't always see eye to eye on things, and we never will. But we can see eye to eye on Jesus Christ, the author and finisher of our faith. Lord, it's when we look to you and understand that we serve a risen Savior, that you are our help, and you are our strength, and you are our portion. Father, I just pray that you'd help us as a people to love one another, to be forgiving, kind to one another. And we ask these things in Jesus' name. Amen.